time, he tried to move his arms and legs, but they were constrained still. At first he couldn't tell, as his body felt detached from his consciousness, and then, as his body and senses became overly sensitized, it felt as though every muscle and tendon were borne down by their own weight, pained by its own sensitivity. Somewhere, deep within him, he clung to the knowledge that he was still alive, and that he wasn't mad. He knew that this had to be part of the drug testing he had been told about, and that these sensations would soon pass. The balance would soon be restored. That part of him that wondered if she really knew what she was doing, and if he would make it back still sane or alive, he quelled with a ruthlessness he could only find from the knowledge that giving in to it would mean certain insanity. So Dean clung and rode the wave, however long it may take. That is, assuming he had any real idea of what time was anymore. When he felt it was safe to open his eyes, she was looking into them.
Ah, so you're still with me, young Cawdor. For a while there, I thought you might be lost. Alive, yes, but reduced to something less than a vegetable.
Jenna smiled. Her sharp features were softened by her broad mouth. She had straight, clean teeth, and although her lips were thin, they were red enough in contrast to her dark complexion to warm her features. Even her hard, glittering black eyes seemed for a moment to become warmer.
I don't want you to become that. I have other ideas for you.
Her voice took on a husky edge, clogged with desire. Dean felt his body respond to the change in her voice, rising to the occasion. It was when he felt her hand fondling him that he realized he had to be naked. At some point in his drug-induced journey, he'd been briefly unshackled and stripped. Jenna laughed softly, feeling the change in him.
So you're pissed at missing a chance of escape, eh?
She gently manipulated him back to his former state.
What? Why?
Dean was unable to voice the questions that raced through his head, his parched voice failing to respond with the requisite speed.
You'll find out in time. The good thing is I don't need to change your eyes, already blue like your father, like the perfect ones. Pity about the hair, though. Maybe the genetic modifications I've been trying will help. Old gene tech is a bit unreliable still, even though I've been trying to pull all the old notes, research, and equipment together. Still, you've responded well so far.
Dean couldn't keep the fear out of his eyes. What had she been doing to him? Jenna sensed his unease.
Just a few modifications, sweetie. They won't kill you. Maybe make you more productive. I'm going to need a good stud, and you're old enough to produce. I know you are, because I've already milked and tested you. You're not firing blanks, boy.
Dean looked away, feeling his cheeks run hot. He felt strangely ashamed at the way Jenna had used him while he was unconscious. The woman kissed him gently on the cheek.
Oh, don't feel upset, sweetie. That raddled and seedless old fool I'm married to can't give me the child I want. Besides, it'd be impure. So would Harvey's, despite the enjoyment I get from him. But he's a moron. You and your father, though. I can see the both of you giving me the progeny I need. With you or your father to give me the new barons, and my experiments to perfect and clone the others, life will be wonderful again.
JB's teeth were chattering as he hunkered down next to Mildred.
Dark night, but it's cold and I'm tired.
Why, John, that's almost a joke.
Mildred looked up at the stars that still shone in the clear sky. Funny how it always surprised her they were still there. Just because the whole damned world had changed, why should they? She was cold as well. Like Christy, she had left her jacket back in Raw, unwilling to face the humidity of the forest and the heat of the day with the thick protective covering. Problem was, the night had come down too quickly, and they still had distance to cover.
What is Harvey's little game here, John? Wouldn't we have been better setting out at night?
Maybe it suits his purpose better. Certainly not for the good of all.
Which should be his job.
Mildred looked ahead of her. The moon was only a crescent, casting little light on the arid and flat plain. The fact that the scouting party hadn't visited them suggested the way ahead was clear. but how far did they have to go now before reaching Sompfogel? The same question was crossing Ryan's mind as he marched beside Alien. The Baron was breathing hard with the pace of the march, and the one-eyed warrior was concerned that the man would be too exhausted to fight well when they reached Sompfogel. Like J.B., Ryan wondered if this was part of some hidden agenda from the Sec Chief, a way of disposing of a popular Baron without raising any suspicion. Ryan called out to the man, keeping his voice low but loud enough to carry.
"Hey, Harvey, how far now?"
"About a mile and a half, maybe 2 miles, Cyclops. Why? You getting tired there, boy?"
"No, but maybe others are."
The Sec Chief looked back over his shoulder. The light was poor, but Ryan was sure that Harvey's gaze was on the Baron rather than on himself.
"No time to rest. We just gotta press on."
Christy felt her hair tighten about her as the whispered words reached her ears. She was cold, shivering, and tired, but still her muty sense was sharp enough to pick up on Harvey's intent. At the same time, she felt a sudden lift within her.
"Jack."
Doc was walking close to Christy and caught the note in her voice.
"The scouting party is near."
Within a few minutes, black shapes appeared against the darkness of the night. Too large, too small. The scouts. The war party halted under the stars, gathering around the scouting party while Blake relayed the information gathered. There were no guards or patrols, but it seemed that Sunshout himself and a few trusted Sun children were preparing for something.
"Did they look like they were ready for an immediate attack?"
Ryan was aware of the stare Harvey gave him, aware that by speaking before the Sec Chief, he was speaking out of turn. Jack shook his head, the pure white of his flowing hair seeming almost incandescent, like a flare in the darkness.
"No. If Sunchild know to trigger nuke, it gone by now."
"May I? Did Sunchild have any kind of computer tech visible? Or perhaps he had the cone of the nuke open? Some of them have the tech within so that they could be set off in the silos in the event of an invasion. Or it could be a remote control, handheld. But then he may have...
"You know a hell of a lot about this shit, old man."
Doc tried avoiding eye contact with the Sec Chief.
"I have had, some experience, you may say."
He returned his attention to Jack.
"Was there anything like that?"
The albino shook his head.
"Look like Mutie's praying to it, like God."
Doc nodded, ignoring some of the nervous laughs from the war party.
"This is good. I would say that we are in no immediate danger. Perhaps..."
He eyed the Baron speculatively, as well as a few of the older members of the war party.
"We could rest a while."
Harvey shook his head.
"Hit hard, hit fast, and don't let the fuckers even get the slightest clue as to what's happening to them. We rest, they could send out their own scouting party."
"That's unlikely. And if they do, then we just chill them. No one will notice until it's too late."
There was a murmur of agreement among the weary war party, stilled by a gesture from Harvey.
"Who the fuck is the sec boss here? We do what I say. Right, Alien?"
The Baron looked uneasy.
"Well, I feel like the rest would do me good. But in these situations, I put you in sole charge. And it would be wrong of me to override that just for my own convenience."
Harvey smiled and cast an eye over the assembled party.
"Okay. Then we carry on."
Another 15 minutes of marching brought them close to Sompfogel. With Blake in the lead, they took the same oblique course as before, leading off and away from the sloping side of the valley and toward the obscurity of the steep inclines. The glow of the Ville's lighting cast a wan illumination over the immediate area. As they stood outside the corpse-covered wire, two of the three women in charge of the armory came forward. They were each carrying one of the drum-fed RPK machine blasters. JB could see the mounting tripods folded in backpacks. The fat woman who had questioned the armorer about the blaster to test his knowledge spared a second to wink at him before speaking to Harvey.
"If you want us to set these up on this side and that,"
she gestured to the far side of the valley,
"then you need to give us help. We'll each need someone to help set and mount these bastards, but first get us over that wire. Awkward with this."
She tapped the heavy blaster. Harvey agreed and detailed Ant and Dee to assist. The heavy sec men were agreeable and adjusted their wrist crons so that they would be able to synchronize the beginning of the attack. Harvey nodded as the four people went forth to set up their posts.
"That's how long we've got now, people. Time to get our shit together. We know we can whip their asses. We just need to get it right."
The Sec Chief divided his forces, detailing parties to fan out and cover all along the bowed ridge of the valley, ending with two parties to take either side of the only road out.
The plan is simple. We go in when the covering fire is started. That'll be over our heads, and we'll cease when we get into Samtvogel itself.